suggest. I would suggest don't let any tick bite you. Thank you, John. Now, there was someone who kind of doubled with John. I couldn't make out anything. So if you were out there and you were talking when John was talking and you'd like an opportunity, hit that push to talk.
Yeah, good evening, Roy. King Bravo 2, Alpha Golf Papa, John. That's why we doubled two same names and the person. I was inquiring about the computer, the fellow with the battery. Was wanted to know what computer, what model computer was it. Was it, you know, a type of computer. Back in that control.
Okay, John, I don't think you'll gain much because it's not so much the brand of the computer, it's probably the brand of the battery, and they probably relabeled it for the same brand as the laptop. But, Jim, if you're out there, if you can give John this information.
Yes, it was an HP laptop with, I believe, like an Amazon replacement battery, so it had all the strikes against it. It was a cheap battery replacement, if I recall, for a LG. Where is it? I forget now.
You said it was an HP laptop and an Amazon battery. And, of course, Asia kind of manufactures 99% of all lithium-ion batteries. The Tesla battery that everyone thinks Tesla makes, I believe Panasonic makes those batteries. And there's a lot of lithium-ion batteries being made in mainland China. You know, they have a lot of lithium, they have a lot of the other rare earths, and they're really trying to make an industry there of electronic vehicles and e-bikes, which caused the problem we were talking about earlier. So, you know, and I'm sure Amazon doesn't make their own lithium ion, so it's some generic Chinese brand that, you know, what can I tell you? It's a cautionary tale. But, I mean, even the lithium iron phosphates that I use are manufactured in China. It's impossible. Surprisingly, it shouldn't be, because I think New York State government gave good old Elon $1 billion to build a lithium manufacturing factory, which is an empty building right now, and probably will continue to be an empty building.
Comment.
Yes, please, comment away.
JACTGSKC2SU. One thing that I haven't heard said yet in response to the battery thing is that any reputable lithium-ion battery manufacturer actually grades their batteries. They run them through a test process that monitors charging rate, internal resistance is measured, and the batteries are graded, because it's hard to know from the outside after the battery is manufactured how well that process has gone, and there's some variation and some tolerances there. So the batteries go through an extensive testing process, and you can buy high or low grade batteries, and then anything that's below, I don't know, it's like an ABC or something like that, anything that's below their minimum gets tossed. But not all battery manufacturers are probably doing this. So if you really, I've never seen it listed anywhere ever on any aftermarket battery, but if you can determine what batteries and who's selling higher grade cells from the better manufacturers, you will get better results. I hope that all makes sense. EC2GSKC2SDO.
AD2DK with an additional comment.
Yes, John recognized J-O-N, and John, J-O-H-N, recognized J-O-H-N. What do you have to say?
I'm working on a side project. You can go to my QRZ page, look up my name, and then do a Google patent search for it. But the products, it's a portable device, and our original concept was to use a replaceable 18650 lithium-ion battery. and lesson learned, and with advice from Underwriters Laboratories and some other subject matter experts, we came to the conclusion that that was a bad idea and that our battery pack needed to be proprietary. It can contain an 18650, no problem, but that 18650 needs to be approved by a regulatory authority, you know, CSA, UL, there's Intertech, and they do exist. But the point being is there are so many bad 18650s out there. Some have the built-in protection, some do not. But, you know, liability-wise, we decided not to touch that AD2DK.
Oh, okay. I mean, the problem is, although, you know, if you're going to sell something, say, to the military or something, you know, everything has to be military spec, everything has to be inspected. A lot of the stuff that we buy is third party. You know, major manufacturers buy them from some factory in China, and they're just as easy to move from one factory and one manufacturer to another one without bothering to check on things. So, although theoretically you can do that, and there's equipment for regular people who can cycle batteries and record values and come to some reasonable conclusion of capacity and other factors, you know, all you have to do is go to Amazon and look up some of the absurd high-capacity lithium ions that aren't physically possible. There is not enough volume in those standard cells to give you the number of milliamp hours that are rated on some of them, in the same way that you can look up places that that will sell you a USB, you know, one of those little thumb drives with a terabyte of data for $12. You know you're going to get a 16 megabyte memory with the ROM kind of reprogrammed to give a false capacity. So although there are agencies that look over these things, I'm concerned that there's a bigger number of people who game the system.
W2DZ.
Yes, Rich.
I have two batteries I use for my MagLoop antenna to turn the variable capacitor. They're both lead acid batteries, and I charge them with a car battery charger. Is there a risk of overcharging or overheating those type of batteries?
Well, also, yeah, someone wanted to say something?
I'm sorry, Roy, if I double with you, it's 82DK. Lead acid batteries, I don't know what size they are. I mean, if they're like the alarm battery size, yeah, there's definitely a risk of overcharging them with a car battery charger. You know, unless maybe you're running it on like the 2-amp range, or if you have one with a 1-amp range. But yeah, I mean, overcharging the batteries, well, sometimes that can bring them back to life, and other times it can kill them. 82DK, back to that.
Yeah, many, many years ago in Dick's time, and we still have the Ontario repeaters hooked up by IRLP, but I haven't heard anyone from coming out of them in maybe about 4 years. There was a big discussion about lead acid. The way it usually dies is sulfonation. The sulfur deposits itself, covers the electrodes, and it deteriorates it. And everyone and their brother has a design to desulfonate a lead acid battery. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. There's probably a little bit too much public relations and not enough technology in the discussion of them. But I think ultimately, unfortunately, you can overcharge any rechargeable battery given sufficient current and sufficient voltage. So the generic answer to can I overcharge my battery is probably always going to be yes. your mileage might vary.
Are lead-acid batteries less prone to fire than lithium-ion? Because I've been charging them overnight, and I wonder if that's not a good idea.
WB2DAD.
Yes, Ed.
UDK. I think Roy knows the answer. I'll let him take it.
Well, I'll give it to Ed because Ed came on first, and then we'll talk about that.
You're worried about overcharging lead-acid batteries, okay? Or a real manufacturer. But why regulate around 3.8 volts? And the battery will just take the current and keep it like that indefinitely. Why does it cross country?
Okay, thank you, Ed. Let me put in my 2 cents worth, and I'll turn it over and see what John has to say. Lead-acid cells are relatively safe. The problem with lead-acid cells is they can produce hydrogen gas under some circumstances, which can be explosive. The lead itself is a relatively inactive material, which is why it doesn't really have a great energy density. You can take a piece of lead and hit it with a flamethrower, and all you're going to do is just melt it and it'll drip to the ground. You try and do anything like that with lithium and it's going to explode in your face. So the fact is that lead has a much lower energy density than lithium, and it is relatively much safer, which is why lead-acid batteries have been around for more than a century and will probably continue. Again, not great for energy density, not great for weight and size, which is kind of a factor of that, but you know, it's durable and it's cheap and it's relatively safe. John, if you have anything to add to that, please feel free.
Well, thank you, Roy. You said pretty much what I was going to say, and what I would say, if you're going to charge lead-acid batteries, if possible, if it's a sealed lead-acid battery, find a way to vent the thing. You know, a lot of times you peel the sticker off and there's caps underneath that you can open up. Let the gases out. They build up pressure inside. As you said, it's hydrogen. Hydrogen is extremely flammable. As I can attest to, doing physics experiments with hydrogen-filled balloons for kids. Well-ventilated area, vent the cells, and have at it. You'll be okay.
Comment.
Yes?
Comment, K2GJE.
Yes, Ed. Please, do.
There are so-called battery minders or tenders that are built to not overcharge a lead-acid battery. They seem to know when the battery is charged. They are not built to bring back a totally discharged battery, but for a battery that is being used for some kind of maintenance that doesn't have be some draws once in a while, they can be left on the battery, and they are smart enough not to overcharge them. They call them battery minders and battery tenders. You definitely can't overcharge a lead-acid battery with just a plain trickle charger over.
Okay, thank you, Ed.
You are absolutely right, and the battery tender, as you call it, that's actually a name brand, and it's what's called a trickle charger. It's not terribly smart. It puts out 1 amp all the time, which is no danger to most lead-acid batteries, you know, with the exception maybe of these, you know, these alarm gel cells. But, yeah, they're out there, and as you point out, that might be a good option for the original poser of the question, 82DK.
Okay, very good, John. Theoretically, all of our modern-day lithium-ion, our cell phones, our laptops have these smart chips They're so ubiquitous that they're practically cost pennies on the dollar. And they're supposed to do things like that, but again, despite that, having smart chips on all my equipment, I still have these expanded lithium-ion batteries. So, you know, a smart charging circuit is only as smart as the engineer, I guess, who designed the chip. Anyone with any further comments before we move on?
Yes, KB2FYH. Jim, KB2FYH.
Okay, Jim?
Okay, but listening to all this, I'm 80 years of age, and I go back to, you know, automobiles, 1949, they had a generator, and they also had a voltage regulator. So when the voltage regulator cut off what was coming from the generator to the battery, so it wouldn't overcharge it. And why are these things not around today with these kind of lithium batteries and everything else? I have an auto, a small car in the back that has a lithium battery in it, and it says, don't overcharge it. Why isn't there a cutout? Over.
Yes? I can just barely hear you.
Hang on. Here, wait a minute while I
go
up to a better antenna.
Yeah, if you can, possibly. Look, Jim, I mean, they, theoretically, like I said before, they put these smart power charging chips on everything and their brother. You know, so I guess they mean well, but I'm not really that thrilled with the results of the design. So they're out there coming up with things. It's just that I don't think they're particularly good designs. But you know, I could be wrong. There could be something amazing about them that I'm totally missing.
Thank you.
AG2DK with an additional comment.
Certainly, John.
It sounds like Ed's trying to get back in, so I will be quick. You know, talking about this gets back to what I was saying earlier. You can buy 18650s that you can't overcharge. You can't overdrain them. You can also buy 18650s that have zero protection, including a lot of hobby store batteries that are meant for RC models that have integral charge protection circuits. But if you try to use these for some other application where you don't have that, you know, you're running into trouble. So the quick answer is, yes, these things do exist, and in a properly implemented system, they are present. Problem is they're not always present. And the ubiquitous 18650 battery can be had in a safe form and in unsafe form. 82DK.
Okay, very good, John. Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of safety measures. I have batteries that if they short out, there's a fuse that cuts them off where you have to put them in the recharger to reset the thermal fuse. There are cell balancing circuits in a lot of multi-cell design batteries so that you balance the charging power so that you don't screw up the battery, because if you have a dead cell or two and you don't have that balancing circuit, it can lead to further complications and problems. Ed, I hope that noisy signal wasn't you, but in case it was, or you know, figured out how to get the noise out of it, please try again, Ed.
Is this better?
It's a little better. You're about 40% noise. You're about 6 decibels below everyone else's audio.
I think I realize what I'm doing wrong. Is this better?
Well, the noise is still there, but thankfully the amplitude's gone up 3 decibels, so that's good.
All right, so let me say about the old generators and voltage regulators. Yes, what happened was back in the day, and I remember that, I'm almost old for you. Back in the day, a generator had a voltage regulator that was mounted inside of the fender. And it had three relays.
one of the relays is thus the most important. Two is the main power which comes off the rotor of the generator to the commutator, and some of it was fed back to the field winding, and the relay was switched in and out rapidly and continuously. Maintain the output voltage at 13.8 or 14 volts or anything before. And that would work very well, but occasionally those relays would wear out and the regulators often had to be replaced with the relays would wear out and it was clattering away. Then they came out with this alternator would change the They changed the generation, but the bottom line is you still want 13.8 or 14 volts, and it still needs a voltage regulator. The difference is the voltage regulators are now solid-state voltage regulators. They're not having the flashing relay contact, and they're internal to the body of the alternator, which is one of the reasons why alternators are fairly expensive. They not only have magnetic, but they also have the regulator built in.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that explanation. You know, my history of automobiles is kind of not as fully fleshed out as yours, so I thank you for that, and I appreciate it. Like I said, the reason why everyone's still using lead acid is because, for all intents and purposes, it's not terribly expensive and it works. So that's why it's going to continue to be a major thing with rechargeable batteries into the future. Will lithium ion continue in the same way? Well, everyone is really trying terribly hard to replace it. Every hour and a half, you'll see some press release from some research and development business trying to make money with dangling the new materials that produce electricity, and it'll continue. Will someone figure out something really nice? The guy who primarily invented lithium ion technology recently passed away, and when he was still working on a replacement right before he died, he hadn't come up with one. So you never know what the future will bring us. You know, perhaps someday there'll be some marvelous chemistry that's safe, effective. You know, there's always good old graphene. I used to talk about the material science of graphene, two-dimensional carbon sheets. If you could get that stuff to work, you could possibly build supercapacitors capable of storing enormous charge in these materials. And so it would not be as much a battery as a supercapacitor. You just charge it up in a couple of minutes and use it for the rest of the day. That's the dream of graphene, but there's about 10,000 other dreams about graphene, which we used to talk about regularly, which we don't talk about as much as we did. Anyway, this is AC2GS. Any other comments?
This is KB2FYH.
Yes, sir.
It all comes down to money and greed and everything else. Who's going to make it money? You know, I'm 80 years of age, and I know the technologies are past, and well, I have to accept the age I'm at, and that's the way it is, and off we go!
Well, yeah, unless someone out there has a time machine or can reverse time or something like that. Well, I think that's always been the case. It's always been money drives everything. If you could make money manufacturing something and talk people into buying it, well, that's what advertising is all about. You know, selling things that people don't need, using money they don't have. That's the American promise. So, you know, it's going to continue to go on like that. I mean, hopefully, modern technology will provide us with technology that's price effective, that's worth what it's offering, instead of just shiny new advertisements explaining that you'll have brighter teeth if you use some battery somehow. So, but, you know, I mean, that's the nature of life, Don. It was like that the day you were born, most likely.
Thank you for your comment.
Well, you're welcome, Al. I mean, it's good to have people with all kinds of different perspective on things. You know, I mean, I kind of take the world the way it presents itself. I don't have rose-colored glasses. I don't make believe. But, you know, there's good to be found, there's bad to be found. So I try and dwell and stick around on the good sides and try and stay away from the bad sides.
You are not going to ask for anything
particularly? What do you mean by that, Ed? What are you expecting?
I was just in my time machine. I went back to summer of 1965, ripping apart the voltage regulator on the inner center of my father's 1958 old. And then when the discussion finished, my time machine brought me back to now.
Okay, I don't have any memories like that. My father never owned a car, so I never had one to take apart. I used to take apart, I hate to repeat myself. My father had, for some odd reason, had a bunch of Ma Bell phones, which you really weren't supposed to have. Ma Bell didn't sell phones. Ma Bell rented phones. So, you know, the phone could be 300 years old. If you weren't going to use it anymore, you had to hand it back to Ma Bell. But for some odd reason, somewhere along the line, he had two of those old black phones. And we had old broken radios, and I took all those things apart. But unfortunately, I never had a car to take apart. So you have a better childhood than I did.
I don't know about that. I
said that with my tongue firmly in my cheek.
I'll bet you never had exactly the car up and slide underneath the car.
You're going to have to try that one more time because you're about 50% voice, 50% noise, and a lot of that kind of got lost in the noise.
I don't understand. I am running 7 watts into a Ringo Ranger of 20 feet, and I'm barely better than I was at the age. But in any event, that's all I wanted to say.
KD2VHD.
Yes, Jim.
Ed, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you still have not solved your problem. Your stuff is broke. It don't work. I know you'll find it and fix it, but it's not fixed yet. That's the first comment. Second comment, this is battery stuff is very interesting. I have a question I want to throw out there. Once I throw out the observation, that it seems to me that it's pretty clear that storing gasoline is way cleaner and safer than storing electricity, as a generality. So I want to throw out this situation. I'm designing and building an e-bike conversion, and then my battery blows up on me. And what I want to do is use either a 48, a 52, or a 36-volt battery to power the e-bike. And I would love to be able to get 12 volts off of it. And I can just tell that the people on the radio tonight have some idea how to do that, and I do not. If you care to venture in that direction, Roy, if not, that's fine, too.
No, sure. I mean, I'll throw it out to the audience. So let me see if I got this straight. You basically want to step down your battery voltage to about a third. Is that what it comes down to? In an efficient way?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, anyone out there with any good ideas on something a little bit more sophisticated than a voltage divider network?
AD2DK, you're in my realm of expertise.
Well, excellent. That's a good place to be, John. Feel free.
What you want is what's called a DC to DC converter, what's called a buck converter. And the nice thing about a buck converter, and for the purposes of everything I'm to say forward, let's assume 100% efficiency. So everybody knows that power in
equals power out, assuming 100% efficiency. And the implications of that are is that if you want to have an output voltage that's a third of your input voltage, by magic, you get three times the output current.
Okay, I don't know what's going on, but I couldn't hear that at all. So, John, unfortunately, let's try it one more time.
I'm sorry, Roy, let me try this again. He wants a DC to DC converter, namely a buck DC to DC converter. So a higher voltage goes to a lower voltage, assuming 100% efficiency. If he divides his input voltage down to a by a factor of three, he gets three times the output current.
Okay, yeah, I mean, buck converters are very popular. You can get them off of eBay. I don't think you can get anything that's 100% efficient. You know, I mean, that's kind of like looking for, for something that a unicorn.
Roger that, Roy. My realm of expertise is power electronics for space applications. So, for all intents and purposes, I'm working with 20-year-old technology. But, latest and greatest stuff, GaN MOSFET, silicon carbide MOSFET, you can get amazing efficiency. I have seen as high conversion efficiencies as 94%. I can't approach that in my radiation hardened world. 85 is real good to me. But, for what he wants to do, cutting edge, it's become very affordable, 80 GDK.
Yeah, fine. I believe in 94%. It's just 100% that make the little hairs on the back of my neck go a little bit off. I wonder if any of these designs to use gallium nitride. I recently bought some new power plugs for USBs. I needed something capable of supplying 30 watts, which isn't generally how USBs tended to work in the old days. And with the gallium nitride, you can pack those in teeny, tiny, very light power supplies.
Yeah, this is definitely true. Gallium nitride, despite the fact that they have kind of wonky gate drive requirements, they're the wave of the future. And for really high power stuff, silicon carbide.
Oh, good. That probably is a higher price point. Not quite necessary for consumers because I haven't seen many manufacturers promoting them. Anyone and everyone that's doing anything in gallium nitride is advertising it all over the darn place. So it's not a secret kind of ingredient for any of these guys.
Yeah, Roger that, Roy. But getting back to the original question, what he wants is a buck converter. Very good efficiency. Really, really bad efficiency would be 70%, maybe 66%, and that would be. I think that would be a real step forward for what he's trying to do. 80 GDK.
Okay, thank you very much, John. I appreciate it. I'm sure Jim appreciates it. So, Jim, you basically are talking about a buck converter. You could Google it on Amazon. You can Google it on eBay. There's tons of them out there.
So I'm wondering if I take this, let's say, 48-volt e-bike battery and plug it into a buck converter and hook it up to a, like it is any tone ham radio I'm using right now, is there any safety margin for the voltage output? It seems like if you're dividing in the third or something like that, it's kind of a random. Do any of those devices have kind of some sort of guardrails on the output voltage?
Well, certainly if
they're... Yeah, the answer is yes. One problem with a buck converter is, parasitic effects, overshoot. Without going into great detail, they have minimum load requirements. You can't put 1% of their capability on them and expect them to be happy. They really like to be loaded up, basically, to their rated current. Over.
So using
radio equipment in the receive mode would tend to not be quite what would work well with those systems.
I would say that's an accurate statement, but there are ways of dealing with that. There are ways of dealing with minimum low requirements. They are sometimes at the expense of efficiency, but you know, what you're trying to do has been done before, has been done many times before, and there's certainly a way to get from point A to point B. AC2DK, back to net.
Yeah, and AC2GS, by the way, buck converters can be fitted with voltage regulators. Unfortunately, ultimately, is everything 100% safe? It's within the realm of possibilities for your lovely little 12-volt or really 13.6-volt power supply for its voltage regulator to go bad and for it to zap your radio. The chances are very, very small, thankfully, but they're not zero. So, you know, nothing's 100%. But, you know, I'm sure there are buck converters that have built-in voltage regulation systems that undermine the efficiency a wee bit, but at the cost of, at the results of limiting risks.
Is there any benefit to using something like a solar charge controller and treating the higher voltage battery input as the input to the charge controller and managing that to a 12-volt battery acting in essence as a capacitor, and or is that effectively the same kind of device?
WB2CQG.
Yes?
Answer his question, then come back to me.
John, you want to answer Jim's question?
I certainly can, Roy. What he's asking is, a buck converter in reverse. It's called a boost converter. And solar cells, rarely do they put out line voltage, but we have them up on our house. And a lower voltage goes into what's called a boost converter. And then that creates a higher DC voltage, which then gets modulated into a 60 hertz sine wave. So what you're saying is absolutely possible, and it's very, very common.
Any comment on the efficiency?
Ultimately, it depends. Unfortunately, that's probably the best answer.
WB2CQT with 2 cents.
Sure, please, hear the 2 cents.
Okay, I've been using one for a couple of years. I use it with an SDR receiver, high frequency, 160 meters to 10 meters. There's a lithium-ion battery that's too high a voltage for the radio, so it goes into the buck converter, which you can set it to what voltage you want. I have it set to 13.5. You can set the amount of current that you want coming out of it. It's got a screen on it where you could adjust different parameters, and you can see what's coming in, what's going out, how much voltage, how much current. You push little buttons. Let me just drop it a second. And I looked across the bands to see where I might hear the switching noise, and it's very, very minimal in my case, and only in a few frequencies, and very low in level, and it's never interfered with trying to receive something that I wanted to receive. The sealed batteries that you were talking about earlier, the alarm batteries and stuff, they say right on them, do not use a car charger. And they have a chart on there saying how to charge them best and what the initial charge should be, the standby charge, with voltages and all that stuff. So, go ahead, Roy.
Gosh, there's a lot of noise on the repeater tonight. Would you like to mention the brand of a buck converter that you were just describing?
You know, before I started talking about it, I was looking for the paper that came with it. I'm going to look at the thing itself now and see if there's an identifying on it. it was a simple thing. You put it together yourself, and no soldering involved. And let me see what I can see, but I can't find the paper that I had that came with it. But go ahead. If I find something, I'll come in.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. So, Jim, getting back to you, it sort of depends upon the design. You could build a relatively efficient buck converter. You could build a real sloppy buck converter. So, you know, it depends upon the specs and that you trust the specs. So, like I said, I mean, just Google the term buck converter either on Amazon or eBay. And take a look at and see what's available, sizes, shapes, capacities, special features and such. Again, some of them have kind of backup regulators to be absolutely positively sure. Some don't. So, you know, you can't kind of say, it's kind of like saying how much watts is a light bulb. It depends on the light bulb.
WCGG, Roy, what's the difference between a trickle charge and a regular charge? Excuse me, my voice just went. I know a trickle charge takes longer, but is that a better way? Somebody mentioned it earlier. Is that a better way to charge batteries always on a trickle charge rather than a full charge?
It's a less traumatic method. You won't have the generation of significant amounts of heat that can lead to detrimental effects to the battery. But, you know, it's still constantly charging, so it's heating up the battery, which decreases the life. But a trickle will do it much less, and it will take a lot more time than a full-blown charger. But, you know, if you have a half or three-quarters discharged battery, you don't exactly want to start it on a trickle charger because, you know, it'll take a couple of days to charge it up under those circumstances. So, again, the best tool for the job.
And the person who mentioned he was reading off an instruction sheet or something of a battery charger that says, do not use a car charger to charge this battery. What would be the reason for that?
Voltages and current don't fall into the range that they would like for this type of battery. WB2EAB trying again, maybe with an answer.
Yes, Ed, you sound wonderful now. Congratulations.
You want to slightly use BNC to BNC cable? All right. Normal car chargers depends on the battery itself for regulation. If left open circuit, they will give you 18 volts. And I'm assuming that's what they're worried about.
Okay. Thank you, Ed.
Why would how does overcharging a battery come about? I mean, once it's fully charged, does it mean there's no feedback circuit or whatever that tells the charger the battery's fully charged, so it keeps on charging? But how does that flip over into the danger zone?
Depends on the charger. Some of them go by the battery voltage, and some of them don't care.
The problem with overcharging a battery, if your charger isn't intelligent enough and it keeps supplying power to the battery, the power has to go someplace. If the battery is discharged, the energy goes to reversing the chemical reaction of the battery and everyone's well with the world. But it gets to a point where there's no more a chemical reaction to reverse. So now it's got to deal with watts going into it that it has to get rid of, and the way it gets rid of it is dissipating it as heat. So now you're heating up your battery, and it gets hotter and hotter. And usually when things get hotter, they get more dangerous. So that's sort of what's going on.
And if a charger doesn't explicitly say charge protection or something like that, then you don't have a safe combination of charger and battery. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, that's the assumption that everyone makes. Unfortunately, if I see a Chinese charger and it says that it has safety circuits, the way I look at it is there's a good 40% chance that there are safety circuits in it, because that's just the nature of consumers there, the consumer goods from there. But, I mean, theoretically, it's always nice to know what you're dealing with, and it's nice to have equipment that has built-in feedback mechanisms that deter the chargers from overcharging a battery. Because, again, heating up a battery is never good. That's why faster charges are kind of going out of fashion. There was a time that nickel metal hydrides were sold with a quick recharge. It generated a lot of heat, and it decreased the lifespan of the rechargeable battery. So people didn't like it, so they took it out of manufacture. But, you know, fast charge usually leads to a lot of thermal loss and degradation.
BHD with some context.
Certainly, Jim.
I'm enjoying all this information. It's wonderful. Thank you all. What brought me to the question is that as I work on this design for this e-bike project, I'm finding that, you know, you need a battery from somewhere from 36 to 32 volts, and a Chinesium battery is, let's say, $300, but a good battery is between $500 and $1,000. And it's an enormous investment in something that just runs your bike. I'm looking at my radio equipment, and I'd love to be able to multi-purpose this thing, either on the bike or off the bike. And it's an interesting topic. Thank you all for your input.
Well, you're welcome, Jim, as always. We appreciate participation in this technical net and giving us subjects to schmooze and talk about. I mean, the Chinese battery is going to be less expensive. So it depends. If you want to cut your corners, and if you feel lucky, then you feel lucky. I've bought things through Alibaba and hoped for the best. But, you know, if I depended upon a component, I didn't buy it at Alibaba. I tried to buy from a manufacturer that I was familiar with. Anyway, it's been fun discussing this, and I really appreciate everyone who participated tonight, and hope you stick around when we do this next week. But we have one more person who checked in. I hope he hasn't checked out. Wesley, are you out there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, would you like to discuss your topics tonight?
Yeah, two topics are from Nobel Prize, recent Nobel Prize, and one is the one that I sent you about the water explosion, water spark explosion, spark explosion of water, or water-related spark explosion. Anyhow, let me start from the first. Okay, so we have a Nobel Prize in physics that goes to scientists who work with electrons. And this is attosecond lasers. So if we look at millimeter, 1/8 of an inch, it's 2.5 millimeter, right? 1 millimeter, that starts with milli. Milli, micro, micrometer, but it could be millifarad and microfarad. Milli, micro, nanofarad or nanoseconds, picofarad or picoseconds, femto seconds, and atto. So we could think about it as if we wanted to know how many seconds already passed by from the time of the Big Bang, that would be 13.8 million years ago. So the number of seconds from that time is actually the number that differs seconds from attoseconds, or farad from femtofarad, or any measure that has prefix millimeter, nano, pico, femto, atto. Let me jump.
Wesley?
Yes.
Okay, I think it's somewhat easier to explain it as an attosecond is a billionth of a billionth of a second.
so that would be quadrillion.
Well, yeah, but that's a billionth of a billion.
Okay. So we have Krausch, Agostini, and what was the third guy? And why is that important? So, I'm gonna give a little pre-text to it, and then I would love you to say more about it. So in physics, either we're looking for the long distance or very short distance, but you talk about attoseconds. It's like it is completely different frontier that of the short time. So what we do is we have laser, actually light, and the laser pulses are directed into the cavity that contains gas, and normally this is some kind of noble gas, and that creates higher harmonics of the electromagnetic waves. Now here's a little point that I'm a little confused, because photon cannot interact with another photon. And electrons are seen by that laser rather as a wave than the particles. So that's the kind of confusion that I have. But anyhow, let's go further.
By the way, you didn't mention Anne LaHoulier as the third winner.
Okay, thank you. So, so you have to get them to overlap so they amplify in some places when we shoot the laser into the cavity, and it cancel out each other, and that gives us a very short pulses. You direct them, so the attosecond physics research is the area that is just about 20 years old, and for atomic structure, attosecond is how the electrons move. So we are actually able to see the blurry picture of the electron, if I could use this kind of analogy. It's like when you see something, the light from that object reflects on our eyes, and then you see what is in front of you. And the same is actually with electrons. We want to shoot light pulses to catch a running electron, and then reflect light that will give us how the electron looks, the shape of the probability of distribution, and where the electrons are, the position of the distribution. That is actually what I want to say for now, and I believe that Dr. Roy will help. Roy will help me out to explain better.
Okay, thanks, UGS. Yeah, what's your question?
QSL. Hello, Roy. Good evening, everyone. I was talking to a man in Belgium today. We had a nice long QSL, and he had a picture of his antenna on his QRZ page, and it was called a Moxon antenna. He had like a multi-band Moxon antenna. What do you know about that?
Well, David, you know, Wesley just kind of came on. He has some subjects. If you want to, next week we could discuss it in minute detail. Is that okay?
Sure, that would be fine. Thank you. I wasn't sure where it was going, so I thought I would at least throw it out there and see. Yeah, next week is fine.
Okay, very good, David. Now, Wesley is kind of discussing Nobel Prize winners. This week, people won it for physics and chemistry and biology. I don't think Wesley is that interested in the biology, or he thinks we kind of covered it too many times before. I don't know. In the case of the physics award, it was for attosecond lasers. As I said, it's pulse lasers with a time interval of a billionth of a billionth of a second, which is an extremely short period of time. So think of it as a strobe light. You know, sometimes there are things that are in motion that just look like a blur to us, but if we shine a strobe with a particular frequency, it kind of freezes the movement at the intervals, and it kind of freezes it, and we can see it. So this is what's going on in an atomic level. You are flashing a laser so short interval that you are freezing a moment of time for an electron where it hasn't gotten around to really going too far, so that you can image its path and what it looks like and what kind of probability field it's occupying. We theoretically know that with Schrodinger's equation, but you can get an actual image using attosecond lasers. So that's the technology. It's in order to probe very fast atomic and molecular structures and discern better information of how they operate. That's why these three people won their Nobel Prize in Physics.
Yeah, if you could say a few pictures about biology, microbiology, and other areas.
Okay, two people won the Nobel Prize in Medicine, Kathleen Carrico and Drew Weissman, and that's for something we all know and love, well, most of us do. They were some of the people first fundamentally doing research that led to the first messenger RNA vaccines that were used to fight COVID-19. So those two people got their Nobel Prize in Medicine.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
I saw Drew Weissman on TV sitting next to his wife on the couch with his cell phone in his lap, and he was speaking with his parents who were still alive. I think he's in his 60s. And they were congratulating him. And he made the point that you're always a kid to your parents, and you know they're very proud of him, et cetera. So it's kind of nice to watch.
Yeah, I gotta hunt something down, and I guess I'll Google YouTube and see if I get lucky. Looks like a nice gentleman. The lady looks nice. I'm looking at pictures of an article. You know, I mean, certainly this is not as esoteric as the physics award for a billionth pulsed lasers. This is something that has affected the entirety of the world, mostly 99.9% for good, and some small, minuscule fracture of raving lunatics for the worse.
Okay. Let me go to the next one. And that would be the development of quantum dots. That's 2023 Nobel Prize in Chemistry. So, we have Mangi Benvali, Louis Bruce, and Russian Alexei Yefimov. He decided to stay in Columbia University instead of returning to Russia. It's quite interesting because television, not really television, flat screen. Okay, so quantum dots are called semiconductor nanocrystals, semiconductor particles, a few nanometers in size, having optical and electronic properties that differ from those of larger particles as a result of quantum mechanical effects. But in a in an easier language, it wouldn't be easier. If I try to explain how the quantum dot works, is you have three colors in your monitor that you're watching, what is in your computer, right? And if you look at the size, it's few nanometers. In comparison, I could say that I have electron microscopes for nanometers. When we were talking before about attosecond intervals, that we could somehow see the blurry picture of positions of an electron, we would say that, and try to talk about the size, ladies and gentlemen. We may say that electron microscopes that I have could see 4 nanometers, but at best, in 1 nanometer, if I really try. Below that 1 nanometer, you could see the row of electrons. Just a little below of 1 nanometer, row of atoms. So you could see the atoms, and there are mechanical devices, atomic microscopes,